Coming up on Golf Today, 1 year out from the Ryder Cup, our cup runneth over with captains. We visit with the American leader, Zach Johnson, in Roma, pride of Cedar Rapids, two-time major champ. Can the Americans end 30 years of road futility? Well, it's Luke Donald's job to say no. The European captain hops on as well. What is on the mind of the former world number one? Englishman, Renaissance man, Northwestern man. Can Europe truly sell itself as an underdog? We visit the Eternal City on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Tuesday, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch and Jaime Diaz as well, 1 year away from the Ryder Cup in Italy. And I tell you what, American golf, gentlemen, on a hot streak. You think about Whistling Straits a year ago. You think about Charlotte and the President's Cup a week and a half ago. Does anything of that relate to what we might see a year from now?
You know, Damon, I think there have been a lot of heavily favored gladiators have strutted their way into Roman amphitheaters over the years only to get upended. So I guarantee you both Zach Johnson and Luke Donald are going to be trying to avoid that heavy mantle favourite going in there next year. And look at the Ryder Cup a year ago and see how much has changed since then. I don't think you can read too much into a hot streak, for better or worse. Mm.
You know, I just go back to 2018 in France, because the same talk came out of Hazeltine in 2016. The U.S. looked like a machine, looked like the depth was all on their side. And, you know, Europe was in eclipse. And, man, they handed them not just a defeat, but a sound defeat. Mm. So it's possible to happen again. Now, perhaps there's some lessons to learn from that. Mm. But on the other hand, I just sort of think every Ryder Cup is a fresh battle.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, throw it all out the window, and it's about that week, just like it is in golf so often. It's a week-to-week game.
Been hard for the Americans to win on the road. Less than a year away, can you believe it, from the playing of the Ryder Cup 2023 Marco Simone Golf and Country Club in Rome, Italy. The U.S. team will look to retain the cup and win for the first time on foreign soil since 1993. Now, the captains have been in the Eternal City, taking in the sights. Zach Johnson, his wife Kim, enjoying time in one of the great cities of the world, the Spanish Steps, not too far from the Trevi Fountain. Just a terrific place. I would have loved to have studied abroad in Rome. Good seeing Zach and Kim having fun. I tell you what, a special time for Zach. 12 career wins on the PGA Tour, twice a major champ, the Masters, the Open at St. Andrews, 5 Ryder Cup appearances, 1 win, 4 losses, twice a vice captain, that loss that Jaime was talking about, 2018 in Paris, and that victory, 2021 in Wisconsin. And the American captain joins us now. Zach, roughly 1 year out from the Ryder Cup, what is your most important job right now?
My most important job right now, well, I think I've checked a couple already off the list. I don't have to add excitement to the Italians and those Romans here in Rome, because I think they're more excited than I am, evidently. So that one's already checked off the list. You know, I think my most important job right now is really to really just pinpoint, you know, kind of who I want to be involved around my team. And then when I'm here in Rome, it's kind of the fun stuff. You know, it's the stuff that it's the items that my wife and I can do together. The team room, the makeup, you know, how does that look? And then I would also say, certainly at the hotel, you know, what are we going to do here that's special? It's 1 week for these guys, for these 12 guys and their spouses, but it's one of the most special weeks. So you want to really, you know, roll out the red carpet, per se, for them. So that's on my list. And then I would say lastly is really continually, you know, diagnosing and trying to figure out Marco Simone and the beast that it is. It's awesome. It's going to be a great test. And, you know, I welcome the challenge of trying to get 12 guys to navigate it.
Zach, you were at Davis Love's side recently in the President's Cup team room. What did you take away from that American victory? And are there things that you would like to transport to Rome? And also, are there things that you would perhaps do differently?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still so fresh, you know, from about a week and a half ago. But, yes, I mean, I was taking notes, certainly some mental notes, and obviously jotting some things down. I mean, you know, the fortunate thing for me was just the mere fact that Davis Love was our captain, and he's one of my dear friends. He was my captain twice in Ryder Cups. So I know how he kind of goes about things. I know how he calculates things. I know how cerebral he is, but also how simple he is. And so a lot of little things like that that can actually add up to be pretty darn important. But, you know, what I have learned is it's very important on who you surround yourself with. It's very important to delegate, which sometimes to a fault, I don't do that. And then it's also important to really go with your gut and your intuition, but knowing full well that, you know, any decision you make is going to be difficult. Welcome that, embrace that. And you know, that's the beauty of the seat I'm in, is I'm going to have to make those difficult decisions. I've witnessed it on many different levels, whether it was Davis or Steve Stricker or whomever. So I've learned a lot, and I'll continue to learn more. But, you know, I've said it. I never dreamt I'd be in this position. But now that I'm here, I know I'm going to surround myself around great people that have been here and maybe some other youth in there, and I welcome that.
Zach, what are the general lessons you learned in being on three losing U.S. Ryder Cup teams on foreign soil over in Europe? And secondly, as a vice captain, you were in France. What are the mistakes that you will not make that were made perhaps in France that won't be repeated this time?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I will say, you know, yes. The second part of your question there, I don't know if there's any mistakes necessarily made. I mean, the beauty of sport is just the mere fact that, hey, in team sports in particular, there's a visitor and a home team. When you're going into a hostile environment, when you're going into Europe, when you're coming into, well, Paris, you know, in 18 and now Rome in 23, it's difficult. And, you know, every decision you make feels pretty heavy, but that's okay. That's the Ryder Cup. I don't know if there was any true mistakes made. I would just say the beauty of sport is it comes down to execution. It comes down to fairways hit, greens hit, and putts made. A lot of that is out of my control. However, I want to put those guys in the best position for success. I don't want to look back and regret things. I don't know how that's going to look, you know, certainly over a year from now, but I welcome that challenge. I mean, that's really what it is. It's just it's an opportunity and a challenge that I'm fully embracing. You know, what I've experienced in my three playing here, you know, I've always kind of said, you know, it's great to be a part of a Ryder Cup team. Playing in one is the best, you know, certainly honor that I've had in my sport and certainly as a pro. I probably almost prefer playing more over here because it's difficult. I love difficult situations. I love playing in the United States with our American fans, but I love seeing teams. I love being immersed into something that's really trying and hard. And so hopefully the team will understand that and reflect that that's exactly what this is an opportunity. We haven't had much success here. I certainly haven't as a team or playing on the teams I played on, but all the more reason to fully accept that difficulty and let's just go fight. Let's go execute, be yourself, and play as a team.
Zach, off the top, you mentioned diagnosing the beast that is Marco Simone. Well, Rory McIlroy was doing just that a couple of weeks ago in the Italian Open. You know, Bob McIntyre won the event. Matthew Fitzpatrick was there. Tyrrell Hatton was there. Only seven Americans were in the field, and they are seven Americans not on the Ryder Cup radar. They typically patronize DP World Tour events, as it were. Was there any push to get some American stars to compete in the Italian Open opposite the Fortinet?
Well, I mean, the difficulty there is, you know, some of those guys that, you know, have had the potential of making the Presidents, well, that made up the Presidents Cup team, you know, probably of those 12, it probably wouldn't be realistic or smart for them to play in Italy and then try to get to Charlotte and prepare for a Presidents Cup. So, especially when the Presidents Cup starts on a Thursday, I think you kind of just check that one off the box there. When it comes to travel, logistics, and being rested for a massive event back in the States, probably not that realistic. What I do know is that there will be an opportunity this spring, if they so choose, to come back or to come to Italy, to Rome, to Marco Simone and compete for the Italian Open in 2023. The date's completely changed from the fall to the spring. So they'll have that opportunity. I'm not going to be the one that says, I'm not going to persuade them to necessarily, because I understand the tolls that travel can take in the States as a PGA Tour member, especially if you have family and other obligations. That's exactly what that is. It can be difficult and trying. So what I do know is that I'm going to try to get whatever team I have assembled to Marco Simone as best I can more than once.
Zach, unlike most of your predecessors in this job, you have six captain's picks next year. And we saw Padraig Harrington last year at Whistling Straits reduce the number of picks he had because Padraig's argument was that being picked puts more pressure on the player who didn't automatically earn a spot on the team. Do you subscribe to that theory, or would you you think it gives you more options to have the six picks?
Oh, well, certainly. I subscribe to the notion. I mean, I like having six individuals that garner their points, that earn their spot. I do like that. But I also know that each year a team takes on a different personality. It takes on – it's an entirely different team. Yes, there may be some similar names and faces in there, but whatever happened in 22 or 20 is different than what's going to happen in 23. So, you know, having the liberties of having six picks, I think you can also look at it like this. I mean, in the States, we have a little bit of control over the golf courses, so you can pick your guys based on what the golf course lends itself. I'm going to do the same thing here. I kind of know, you know, over the years what Ryder Cup Europe and the captains that have held their captaincy due to the golf course, given the parameters. And I can, you know, not to be too cliche, but I can kind of go horses for courses if I desire with my vice captains. So it does give me some liberties. All that being said, of those 12 individuals, there's some obvious ones you might just pick. But I think what I appreciate is that the liberties and the freedoms I have in those six picks in the calendar year is really what helps. Like, for example, I mean, I don't want somebody necessarily to play really good early on and then taper off and still qualify for the team. I've been in that position where I've been in bad good form early, made the team, in bad form in the cup. It gives me the liberty to have 12 guys that are playing good at the right time and to play their best when it comes to 2023.
Zach, you've said that the Ryder Cup is the purest form of golf. Why is that?
Well, I appreciate, you know, certainly it's withstood the test of time, number one. You know, 1927, this cup is amazing just in that feat alone. I think it's the purest form because really what it comes down to, it's not about one individual. It's not about self. It's about team. It's about your country. It's about who you represent and why you represent them. And then I would couple that with just the mere notion that, you know, we play an individual game, a mundane sometimes individual game, week in, week out, year after year. And so when you can take such an individual element and take it into a team atmosphere, especially as a team sport guy, it's just special. It's unique. And so, you know, you're playing for more than yourself. That's the bottom line, and I think that's what the Cup stands for.
Zach, when you talk about how the Cup has thrived on the perception that guys are playing for more than themselves, has it been diminished by this perception that exists now that so many people were willing to potentially walk away from the Ryder Cup for money?
I can't speak on behalf of fans and what others think. What I know is that other guys have made choices, and that's their own prerogative. What I know is that when it comes down to certainly the Ryder Cup, year after year, when I was trying to qualify these teams, it was one of my highest, if not my highest goal on my list. In talking to some of the guys that I was with, say, in Charlotte, or even, you know, weeks leading up to it, the overall sentiment is I cannot wait for the President's Cup. I cannot wait for team events. I cannot wait for the 2023 Ryder Cup. And it's just that. I want guys that want to be on my team, that want to represent Team USA, and I want guys to make it their own team. They're going to have ownership in it too.
Well, Zach, the last time the U.S. won on foreign soil, you were 17 years of age at Regis High in Iowa. Jordan Spieth says that the work of the task force will really not be complete until the U.S. wins on foreign soil. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, I've seen the fruits of the task force already of 2014-15. I've seen a shift in just how we operate. I've seen, I think, a couple of just beautiful items right off the bat where the PGA of America and certainly my peers have had a lot of great meetings to make Team USA better. I mean, that's what it's all about. Certainly, it would be great to win over here, but it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. And again, let's welcome that challenge. I believe the system that was put in place for the most part back in 14-15 has already paid dividends and will continue to. It is not rigid, but it has parameters. And alongside of that, the beauty is regardless of who's in my seat as a captain, year after year, cup after cup, you can take on the personality of that individual, but yet still stay in the parameters of what was established.
Zach, your dad, Dave Johnson, told his kids, winning isn't everything, but wanting to win is. Will you impart that concept, that axiom, to your team?
You know, my father is quite the competitor. He's got a history of, showcasing his competitive nature in a number of different fashions. What I do know, when it comes to the Ryder Cup, I don't have to motivate individuals to want to win the Cup. I don't have to motivate individuals to want to win a golf tournament. That's what we do. If there's anything that I can relay to them or anything that they can feel or sense from me is that let's bring all the trying and difficult situations we have here in Rome, we have in Europe, we have here, let's bring it to the surface, embrace it, and go compete. It comes down to execution. They know what they're doing. I don't have to reinvent the wheel for them. I'm going to let them be their own individuals with a common mission. Obviously winning is the goal, but I can tell you what I can do for them is ideally put them in a posture, in a position for success. That's my whole thing. I want them to feel as normal as possible in the most uncomfortable and unnormal position.
Zach, for so many years, it felt as though the American teams were distracted by friction, whether it was Watson and Mickelson at Glen Eagles or Patrick Reed in Paris, Bryson Brooks last year. Do you feel as though there's a new era of cohesion in the American team and all of that has been put to rest?
Well, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of certainly way back. I mean, what I do know is this. I have a goal of creating a team where there's synergy, where each individual complements the next. And I'm not just talking about the 12 players. I'm talking about my vice captains. And frankly, I'm talking about their spouses and the like. So we're going to be a team of the utmost. I do appreciate these weeks as a pro. They've been some of the highlights of my life. I do appreciate these weeks when the only drama that we see is on the golf course hitting a golf ball. My desire and my hope is to put guys in that position where their golf clubs are the only things that are performing dramatic notions.
Well, from Cedar Rapids to Augusta to St. Andrews to Rome, it's been fun following this underdog career, Zach. Best of luck and thank you.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you.
And the U.S. team, as it stands, 1 year out for Zach Johnson. Scotty Scheffler atop this list. Will Zalatoris looking for good health. DJ at number 5 as a LIV golfer, unlikely to be in Rome. 6 automatic qualifiers, 6 captain's picks for Zach Johnson. Surely will be one of the most difficult and important decisions as captain. And after the break, more reaction on the upcoming Ryder Cup. What do the Americans need to do to keep smiling and retain the cup in Rome? That question answered next. Welcome back to Golf Today. Tough task ahead for Team USA for the 2023 Ryder Cup. They'll take on the Europeans at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club in Rome, Italy. The Americans trying to win the cup on European soil for the first time since 1993. And I tell you what, you know, I remember Furyk and Bjorn hitting shots in the Eiffel Tower. You got Luke Donald, Zach Johnson enjoying some of the sights and sounds of Rome, Colosseum, Spanish Steps. It's a really cool opportunity for them. It'd be cool for the American golf fan is seeing more victories for the United States. 4 of the last 6 for Europe. 6 straight home wins for Europe as well. Zach Johnson will try to change that as captain for the Americans. We just spoke to him. Jaime Diaz, what's your biggest takeaway from that conversation?
You know, I think Zach's one of those guys is not going to have to say a lot, although he's quite articulate. I think he's got tremendous respect in that team room. He's got tremendous respect all the years he played on tour because of what he did with what he had, which was absolutely maximized with a great attitude and real courage under pressure. And when he talks about, you know, I embrace nervousness, you know, it sounds like a line from a self-help book, but he lived it. He really did it. And everybody who's played with him and caddied for him, even Damon Green, thought, you know, Zach was just one of those guys who wasn't scared. And you can't say that about many people out there. You know, he just had a kind of, you know, personal ethos that if I'm really scared, I got to stand up even harder. And in talking to family members back when I did a feature on him, all his family members said it was really a big deal in their family to play sports and to step up to the plate under pressure and succeed and give it the best. Even if you didn't, you not be afraid of the failure of it. Don't be ashamed of it, but never back down from it. And I think he just walks that walk, and that's a big deal in the team room. I think that's his greatest, asset as captain. But, you know, beyond that, I just think I think he knows he has the best team, and he doesn't want to leave any locker room material out there. I think, you know, at this moment, certainly with a year to go, it's pretty safe, you know, kind of talking points.
Embracing difficulty, Eamon, were you surprised at all at his answer about the reason there were no Americans, you know, toward the top of the Ryder Cup standings in Italy, competing at Marco Simone a couple weeks ago when you had Rory and Fitzpatrick and Hatton, McIntyre getting those extra looks, considering how much the Americans have struggled on foreign soil?
Not surprised at all, and nor was I surprised when Zach said that he wasn't going to try to lean on them to show up there in May next year when they could play the Italian Open on the same golf course, because what you're seeing now is what the real effect of the task force was. It's reducing the job from captaining to creating an atmosphere. And that's what Zach does. It's not an accident that four of the most amiable, respected guys have been captains of the Ryder Cup team since then, with Zach, Jim Furyk, and Davis Love, and Steve Stricker. That is what they're doing. They're creating this collegiality among players, which exists now perhaps more than it has in a generation on this team, with so much toxicity having been removed. But that's ultimately what Zach's job is creating the atmosphere. I was kind of struck when he said that there were... He kind of avoided the issue of whether or not there were mistakes made in Paris. And not only were there mistakes made, but there's a possibility that they land on Zach's table as well. I mean, Jim Furyk's biggest mistake was burning a captain's pick on Phil Mickelson, who couldn't have hit French territory with his driver if he teed off from the top deck of the Eiffel Tower. But he was there, and it was a disaster that week. Zach now has six captain's picks. Jim Furyk didn't have that many. So with each of those picks comes opportunity, but it also comes risk for
Zach
as
well. What's the biggest danger, then? What's the biggest risk for this American team that looked so at ease and comfortable at Whistling Straits as well as in Charlotte?
I think feeling like they checked every box in preparation and then getting into it. And, you know, as Mike Tyson used to say, everybody has the plan until you get hit in the mouth. Who knows if the Europeans come out hot? And if you're not totally prepared for that psychically, you know, doesn't matter how well you prepared or what your record is, it then becomes a street fight. And I think that's, you know, where Europe wants it to be. And the home crowd is going to help. And the home course that they play more often in Europe is going to help. And, you know, that's really, I think, the great intangible in team sports, especially, is sometimes things shift. The psychic advantage shifts, and that could shift to Europe early. I think, though, if they just play it out and rely on the merit of their quality, they're in good shape. And be prepared for a European team that has nothing to lose and comes out, as it often did in the 80s and 90s, with golf above their heads. And that could happen, too.
Is there a danger that you see for this American squad? I mean, we've seen talk about a shift, time. We see a shift in the bodies, the personnel of this team. Gone, most likely, the DeChambeaus, the Reeds, Koepka, DJ. Interesting personalities, combative at times. But man, that's a talented crop of players that probably won't be available to the Americans. What role will that play?
Zach Johnson would probably offer as Exhibit A what we saw in Charlotte 10 days ago, that the loss of those players is not particularly detrimental and may actually be beneficial to the US team in terms of its cohesion and how it functions. But what history has also shown us is that there is really no crossover between what happens in a President's Cup and what happens in a Ryder Cup, because there's so much extra baggage and edge that comes with the Ryder Cup. And nor, I think, can the Americans take any kind of comfort in this idea that the European team is just a small core of guys and then gets thin very quickly, because people remember the names of Jamie Donaldson and Philip Price and Paul McGinley, who were the giant killers in European golf, even in Ryder Cups where the best players didn't necessarily perform to expectations. Luke Donald probably doesn't have that luxury next year. He's going to need his guys to perform and have the giant killers. But I don't think complacency is an issue with this team. But there's still that little bit of fear that's attached, that little bit of pressure from never having won since, you know, Scottie Scheffler was born 3 years after the last U.S. victory in Europe.
And that's important. And that's why I asked Zach the question about Jordan Spieth, saying, you know what, this task force has done some wonderful things, cohesion, and you mentioned the collegiality of this team. But, man, you haven't won on the road since 1993. If I'm Zach, I'm showing him film of Seve in 97 riding that golf cart, that souped-up golf cart, and running circles around Tom Kite and Michael Jordan, as it were. Jordan was in, you remember, Jordan was there, and my gosh, you had Tiger, you had Phil, you had Couples, you had Davis, and they found a way, Seve and company, to take them out.
Yeah.
Not to mention 06, Darren Clark, Lee Westwood, not to mention 10. I mean, we have seen, I agree with Spieth, the work is not done yet.
Well, it's the hardest hurdle they have, and I think
the biggest one, right?
And I think Zach is preparing him for, hey, this is going to be hard. This is, you're going to be really nervous. And Paul Azinger preached that philosophy in 2008. He goes, look, don't act like, hey, it's going to be fine. We're going to be relaxed. We're going to be ready. You're going to be more nervous than you've ever been. So, regardless of whether you're the better players on the world ranking or not, be ready for that. And if you're ready for that, then I think you're prepared not to be upset. But if you go in and in any way sort of feel like, you know, hey, we've done everything. We're ready.
Yeah.
We're a machine. We take the President's Cup. We take the Ryder Cup the same way. The continuity is unbeatable. It's an individual match every single time.
Yeah.
They all have their own personality. And what Eamon's saying about these giant killers, they come out of the woodwork, especially when it's their biggest moment of their careers. Sometimes they cringe. Most of the time, though, they're inspired. And that's an inspired team that Europe has won on their own soil many times.
Never too early to start talking about a sword fight in a Roman Colosseum. Still to come on Golf Today, our colleague Noda Begay III is putting down the microphone, putting on an icy hot patch and picking up the sticks once again. He's preparing for his PGA Tour Champions debut. The oldest rookie in town joins our show right after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. 2 weeks ago, Steve Flesh won his third PGA Tour Champions event at the Pure Insurance Championship at Pebble Beach. And with apologies to Steve, his feat was less impressive than the man sitting next to me, finishing runner-up in the team division.
Thank you very much.
But the PGA Tour Champions took a week off after Pebble to recover from the shock of Damon's near victory. But it's back in action this week for the Constellation Furyk and Friends, hosted by Jim Furyk and his wife, Tabitha. Following this week, the tour will head to North Carolina for the SAS Championship and then Richmond, Virginia for the Dominion Energy Charity Classic.
Yeah, this week the PGA Tour champion is going to say hello to a new face. It's not me. It's Noda Begay III, who will make his tour debut this week. How about 4 wins on this PGA Tour CV? This was 2000 Travelers Championship. Final round, 64. One-shot win over Mark Calcavecchia at 20 under in one of the really cool celebrations that we've seen. He's our colleague now, friend as well. You see the career on the PGA Tour for Nota, 217 starts. You tip your hat to 4 wins, 14 top 10s, 31 top 25 finishes, and Nota joins us now. It's great to see you, buddy. I remember during the spring, Cameron Morfitt, the golf writer, wrote this piece on you saying you've been ducking into physio trailers, hitting balls in the shadows, doing everything you could to prepare for this week. What's it been like?
It's been great. I look at the last 10 years in television as like a graduate course in golf. You know, studying statistics from an analytical point of view, talking to instructors, talking to trainers, talking to my colleagues in television, you know, the other analysts on our team, hosts, everybody that covers the game, and just sort of picking up on just the little things that make a difference in a PGA Tour player's performance, and then trying to implement that in my own game on the fitness side, on the nutrition side, on the mindset, and just doing everything I could to be ready for this week. I don't think I'm quite where I'd like to be, but I'm certainly going to, you know, put up a good fight.
No, when you talk about breaking down your game, it's been a decade since you competed. When you set about reassessing your game to try to play senior golf, were you surprised by anything being a little sharper than you thought it might be? And on the other side, is something proving to be a struggle to kind of get on top of again?
I think the hardest thing to get on top of is, you know, what are my thresholds now? Swing speeds, ball speeds, all those things. The ball's changed quite a bit in the last 10 or 12 years. So getting used to seeing just what the ball will allow me to do, getting fit for the right ball. Everything is so custom now, from the balls, the shafts, the irons, grips, anything and everything that you can kind of assign a value to, you can actually custom to your specifications. So, you know, club manufacturers have been wonderful. Ball manufacturers have been great. So I really don't have any excuses, Eamon, to be quite honest. I wish I did, but if I go out there and pitch a goose egg, it's certainly not because I didn't get any help.
Well, no, to think about it, in the last decade, you've been going to golf tournaments and putting on a headset, going to Tommy Roy meetings. How strange is it to all of a sudden be at a golf tournament and you've got clubs in your hands now?
When I got here this morning, I accidentally went to the TV compound to park my car, but then they told me you could actually drive in the front gate when you're a contestant. So I had to turn my TV parking pass in for a player parking pass, but that's okay. I'm okay with that, Damon. This is great. I just had lunch with Mike Weir, Padre Carrington, Fred Funk, and we were laughing about just all the different things in the game and the power that a lot of the young players have. You know, Freddie's son Taylor still trying to make it on some of the mini tours. So it's a reunion of sort, but still a very high level of competition, which I'm really looking forward to.
Your regular tour career, Noto, was kind of hampered by recurring injuries. Do you have any sense now physically what your body will allow you to do in terms of going forward, even into 2023, in terms of the amount of golf you're going to be able to play?
Well, I've really tried to push it hard in terms of my fitness these last 6 months, and not necessarily trying to injure my back, but just trying to find out what thresholds are available to me. How many reps, how many balls can I hit a day? You know, how many rounds in a row can I sustain? I mean, just looking at this particular week, specifically, you know, there's a pro-am tomorrow, a pro-am on Thursday, and then three competitive rounds with no cut. So, that's five guaranteed rounds in a row plus today's practice round. So, I really have to be mindful of just how much I can take, as anyone does that has a hip or a back issue. Is you can still play at a high level. You just kind of got to be mindful of what your body will allow you to do. And so I'm kind of still learning that now, but I haven't had any major issues. It's not getting worse. In fact, I feel better as I've gotten a little bit more endurance and more tournament rounds under my belt. I played a event in Farmington, the San Juan Open, a couple weeks ago, which was 72 holes. So I feel like I'm ready for it.
Noto, what's the meaning that you can share this journey with your children compared to when you were younger and winning on the PGA Tour as a 20-something?
It means the world to me. I know, you know, Tiger had mentioned it, you know, when he was going through a series of injuries, you know, over the last 10 years in terms of Charlie and Sam only knowing him as the YouTube golfer because they hadn't really ever really seen him play at a high level. And then for him to play at the highest level possible and win the Masters in 2019, I think was great for him to be able to share that. I certainly am not hoping to win the Masters. I'm just it'd be great. I think it's been great to see for my kids to see me train and putting in the time in, getting in the gym at 5 a.m. and then coming back and making breakfast and taking the kids to school. I still have my responsibilities as a parent. I just had to move my workouts to different parts of the day. But I think it's good for your kids to see you set goals and have a purpose, because then you can sort of ingrain in them, you know, the proper sense of work ethic and responsibility that you can have for your job and your craft. I care a lot about my golf, and hopefully I'll be able to develop a sense of some competitiveness over the next couple months.
Well, Nota, if you do win this week, I suggest you jog around the green as opposed to sprinting as you did back at Hartford in 2000. Congrats on the debut. Best of luck. Take care of that body and mind. We'll speak to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
There he is, Nota Begay III. Let's take a look now. Charles Schwab Cup standings. About 2 months left in the PGA Tour champion season. Stephen Auker, what a renaissance it has been for him post age 50. Steve Flesch now at number 10, coming off that great win at Pebble Beach at the Pure Insurance Championship. Coming up on Golf Today, we are joined by PGA Tour Canada Player of the Year, Will Bateman. He's heading to the Korn Ferry Tour in 2023. We catch up with him after the break. Plus, we've got notes on the Korn Ferry Tour's new schedule. That's next. Welcome back to Golf Today. For years, the Korn Ferry Tour has bred the game's biggest stars, and earlier today, the tour released its new-look 2023 season schedule featuring 26 events, including three new stops in Chile, Oklahoma, and New Jersey. How about that trifecta? And a record prize fund of $28 million, up nearly 38% from last season. In addition, as announced in June, 30 PGA Tour cards will be awarded at the end of the season, while the player who finishes on top of the points list will earn a spot in the Players and the U.S. Open. There will no longer be a finals portion of the schedule, awarding an additional 25 cards next season. One of those players who will compete on the Korn Ferry Tour next season, Will Bateman, who earned the 2022 PGA Tour Canada Player of the Year honors in the 10-event season, won twice, recorded four top tens, did not miss a single cut, earning a card on the Korn Ferry Tour for 2023. Let's welcome him to the show now. Will, the significance of winning the Fortinet Cup and becoming the second Canadian to win PGA Tour Canada Player of the Year honors after Mackenzie Hughes, putting that hockey jersey on, is what?
Oh, just, it's a dream. You know, I played really great at the last event of the year and, you know, luckily was able to capture the Fortinet Cup and just really excited to not be able to, go to Q school and just really excited for next year.
Well, before this year, you had never had a top three finish. You'd only had, now you've actually won twice on the PGA Tour Canada. What changed for you this year? Because it does seem a remarkable sea change where you suddenly found your confidence and your game in 1 year.
Yeah, I put in a lot of time over the last 2 years. And, you know, during COVID, we weren't able to play up in Canada. But I really just put in a lot of hard work and a lot of hard work on my mental game. And luckily, it showed this year. And, you know, getting the win early at the ATB was a, you know, big confidence booster for me, just, you know, winning in my hometown and having everybody follow me and watch me. And I was able to, you know, keep that momentum going for most of the year. And, you know, obviously winning the Tour Championship was amazing. So I'm just really fortunate to be here and continuing to work hard and see where the chips fall next year.
Love that hockey jersey, by the way. And speaking of Canada, the RBC Canadian Open has become one of the loudest, most passionate, most fun events on tour. What are you most looking forward to in competing on an exemption there this season?
Yeah, you know, that's always been a dream of mine to play in my home open and to be able to earn it was really important this year for me. I have applied for that exemption and haven't really gotten it. So, you know, to be able to play as good as I did and earn that spot is huge. And I'm just really looking forward to going up to Canada and playing.
We've got to ask, Will, what's the name of the caddy who just appeared down to your left side there? He's about to start barking.
So that was it's my buddy Carter here. He's my pup. I've had him for 3 years and he's been a huge support of mine too. So,
and a very good boy. Now, what are your goals for next year as you head out on the Korn Ferry Tour, Will? Where are you setting in terms of your objectives to accomplish next season?
Yeah, so I think having a full status is huge, obviously. You know, your main goal is to obviously pass that threshold of points and get a tour card. You know, I'm just kind of trying to let this year sink in a little bit and reset my goals. And I had some substantial ones this year that I wanted to accomplish and I checked off a lot of the boxes. And I feel like if I just set those goals a little higher for myself next year and continue to work hard, I think the chips will fall. And you know, obviously, you want to get a tour card. That, you know, that's the main goal. But I think if I just, you know, stay patient and focus on, you know, my process and really just work hard, I think that my game will show.
I love it. Checking some boxes. I got a box for you to check. Now, just work with me, Will. 2 years from now, a President's Cup in Canada. Can you allow yourself to dream? Have you spoken that into existence, into the universe as a goal?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I seeing, you know, Pendy and Corey play this year, I thought was big for me. And you know, obviously, Mac was the only other Canadian to win the points list up here. So I think that gives me some confidence definitely moving forward that it's possible. And, you know, obviously a President's Cup in Canada would be a dream come true.
Well, you're on record as saying that your dream foursome is your dad, Tiger Woods, JJ Spahn. You're going to have to explain the last one for us. Why JJ?
JJ was my best friend in college. We both went to San Diego State together. I was only there for 1 year, but we spent a lot of time together. I moved to Florida, so we kind of lost touch. And then, you know, moving back over to Scottsdale, I've spent a lot of time around him. And to be honest, this year, I really wanted to follow in his footsteps a little bit. He won the points list up in Canada in, I believe it was 2015. And he's had a pretty successful career on PGA Tour. And I'm just, you know, fortunate to be able to spend time around him and really pick his brain on some things and play golf with him. And just a really cool friendship that we have. And I'm looking forward to playing with him up in Canada next year, too.
Good answer. Great fish tacos in San Diego, as I know you are aware. Best of luck on the Korn Ferry Tour, Will. Thanks for the time.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, still to come, we've heard from Zach Johnson. We're about to visit with his counterpart, Luke Donald. The European Ryder Cup captain joins us from Rome 1 year out from the biennial team event, and he's got a 30-year win streak at home to protect. So what's his strategy? We're going to ask him. Stay with us. The last time Europe lost a Ryder Cup at home, Luke Donald was 15 years old. The captain is joining us from the eternal city of Rome to talk about his strategy to keep that streak alive and whether his team is divided over the possible inclusion of LIV golfers. Golf Today continues right now.
Golf Today.
Rolling on a Tuesday, Golf Today, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Jaime Diaz, three guys who remember newspapers and typewriters as well. That's old school. We're talking new school, less than a year away from the playing of the 2023 Ryder Cup at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club in Rome, Italy. The Europeans will look to take back the cup on home soil after a convincing defeat at Whistling Straits, 19-9. Do you remember that? Well, man hoping to turn it around, European Ryder Cup captain Luke Donald, a veteran of four Ryder Cups as a player, arrived in Rome this week, as did Zach Johnson, carrying their bags, hanging out by the Coliseum, hitting some shots, having some fun. It's all fun and games 1 year out. You take a look at the career of Luke Donald, a former world number one, 13 wins around the world, top 10s in all four majors, four Ryder Cup appearances, all wins for Europe, twice a vice captain as well, with a 1-1 record. And the European captain joins us now. Luke, 1 year out, you are in the Eternal City. What are the emotions for you at this point, being in Rome?
Well, Damon, it's becoming a little bit more real, that's for sure. It's been a whirlwind couple of days. We've got to visit some of the iconic monuments here in Rome. We've gone to some amazing dinners. It's been a great welcome from the Italian people, to be honest. And it's off to a good start.
Luke, you were in Rome a couple of weeks ago when you played the Italian Open at Marco Simone. What did you take away from the experience of playing that tournament there that's going to influence how you approach things a year from now?
Yeah, I played 2 weeks ago. I played the year before. The course, you know, is being tweaked a little bit here and there, but not so much. I mean, it's a great venue for the Ryder Cup, a great amphitheater for the fans. There's a lot of elevation changes, has great views over the city. I think it's going to be an amazing venue for the Ryder Cup. So I'm excited. I was excited to see all the players playing well that week. Bob McIntyre in a playoff with Matt Fitzpatrick. Rory was up there. There were a few other guys that, you know, potentially could be key in my team come 12 months' time. So it was a very successful week.
Luke, in your opinion and your experience, does Europe have, as a team, kind of a playing style identity? And does one that differs perhaps from the U.S., at least in general? And if so, do you expect to continue that in Rome next year?
In terms of their playing capabilities, is that what you said?
No, for example, we always talk about the U.S. team having, you know, longer hitters and you guys wanting, you know, narrower fairways, you're straighter, perhaps more accurate with the irons. Is that a style that you believe does kind of continue through the European team year, Ryder Cup to Ryder Cup? And would you want to continue it in Rome?
Well, certainly, Eduardo Molinari, one of my vice captains, is very, works with the statistics, works with a bunch of players on the European and PGA tours. And we've certainly taken a deep dive into all things statistics. You know, the difference between the teams is pretty small, but there are little differences here and there. And you set up the course. That's the privilege of a home captain to try and, take advantage of those. So usually, yeah, we have a little bit longer roughs, a little bit tighter fairways, those kind of stuff. And but, you know, again, the course, the Italian Open was won at 14 under. A year ago, it was 13 under. It's already a good test of golf. So not much needs to be done to tweak it.
Luke, I'm curious how much of the President's Cup you watched and what your biggest takeaway was as you prepare for the Ryder Cup.
I watched quite a lot of it. I was impressed with how well the internationals came back after a very slow start. I think they needed to get off to better, quicker starts. There seemed to be a little bit of a difference on the greens, certainly early on. The Americans seemed to putt a little bit better than the internationals. But, again, very proud of the work Trevor did. He seemed to really motivate and inspire his team, and they were able to kind of stay in there. I think at one point on Sunday, the predicted score was 15-15, and I don't think anybody would have really given them that much of a chance to tie a very, very strong U.S. team.
The DP World Tour announced, Luke, recently that they were going to create the Hero Cup in Abu Dhabi in January, that you were a great advocate for, in which it's basically two teams are going to play foursomes, four balls, singles, very much similar to the Seve Trophy back in Europe's Ryder Cup heyday. To what extent and in what way are you going to use that as an incubator for the team that you're going to have in Rome?
Yeah, it was certainly something that was important to me to bring back some kind of match play event, you know, in the year between Ryder Cup, between Ryder Cups. I think it's a great opportunity to get some younger players, some experienced players together in a team room to feel what team golf is like. It's an opportunity for potential future captains to learn the ropes. And it just is a great way to, you know, again, get people together, unifying a group of golfers and getting them kind of used to what the Ryder Cup is all about.
Luke, you're a fairly self-contained person in public. I wonder if your personality was different in the team room during the Ryder Cups. And do you consider yourself someone, whose interpersonal role with the team is important, both as a player and now certainly as a captain?
Well, I think communication is key. And, I'll certainly be traveling a lot more to Europe over the coming 12 months and getting to know some of these younger players a little bit closer. But, I've always been sort of a quiet leader, and I don't think that will really change. You know, you can't change your own characteristics, but, you know, again, that will kind of be my leadership style. But certainly communication, getting to know players, you know, and trying to create the best environment for my 12 guys to succeed come Rome in 2023.
Luke, you mentioned the Europeans who added the Italian Open to their schedule. Rory McIlroy, we saw his tears at Whistling Straits. How much of a rock is he for this team? And the message that it sent to you and the team that he explicitly played in the Italian Open to learn this golf course and compete on this golf course?
Well, it means a lot. I think we were very happy with the guys that showed up in Italy. We have another Italian Open scheduled in May. To have Rory, Matt Fitzpatrick, Victor Hovland, you know, amongst a slew of other players playing was meant a lot to me. You know, it certainly showed confidence that they that the Ryder Cup means and is at the top of their priority list. We as you said, we saw Rory at the end of Whistling Straits, how much it meant for him to lose and how he felt like he'd let the team down. And certainly, we'll certainly be trying to change that come Rome in 2023.
Speaking of Rory, Luke, he said publicly several times that the people who left for Liv were generally not likely to be part of future teams going forward. Shane Lowry has said similar things, but John Rahm has, on his side, suggested that he wouldn't mind seeing a Sergio Garcia be part of a future Ryder Cup team. Is there any division in your team at all?
I lost you a little bit, but I think I got the gist of your question. Yeah, obviously, you know, right now, anyone who went to LIV is still, who are European Tour members, continue to do that. They can earn points and technically be on that team. So, you know, again, until there's a little bit more clarity on the situation, I'm not trying to waste too much energy on it until I have more control. But right now, I'm just letting it kind of play out, and we'll take it as it comes.
Luke, you've referenced, you know, your great desire to improve as a player and determination and discipline. And you were talking about it in context with being captain. How would you like to be able to impart those same qualities from yourself onto your team?
I mean, you know, again, this isn't about me, but certainly in my individual career, I think I achieved probably more than most people would have given me you know, credit for. They probably looked at this guy that didn't drive it that far, that straight, but was able to get to number one in the world for over a year. So there's a lot of burning ambition, a burning desire to improve and find little incremental ways to get to that next level. And certainly, you know, I'll be looking at, I'm a very detail-oriented person, so I'll be looking at all the little details that could give us the best chance to be successful in Rome.
Luke, the Americans haven't won on foreign soil since 1993. Why?
I guess being at home, it is an advantage. You know, we've had a lot of success at home, and it's been very hard for them to break that down. You know, I see this Ryder Cup that will still be underdogs, though. The American team are extremely strong on paper. We haven't seen a team this strong in a long time. I think their average world ranking was somewhere around the 11 mark for the President's Cup. They have some teams that seem to be forming great relationships, the Schauffelet and Cantleys, the JT and Jordans. They seem to be gelling extremely well, and they have great win percentages under their belt. So it's still going to be a very tough test, but certainly having that home advantage is going to even it out a little bit.
Luke, I see you're doing the tried and tested strategy of Ryder Cup captains when you're asked about six straight wins and you start talking about how the American team are the overwhelming favourites again. But do you feel pressure not having lost at home for so long? Does that add to the pressure, or is the pressure what it's going to be for you anyway?
Yeah, I think the pressure is what it is. We'll be, you know, working over the next 11 months to, again, put everything in place to give us the best opportunity, and certainly have 12 guys that are ready to go to battle. And it's not going to be easy, as I said. The Americans are going to be very, very strong. We know that. But we will be prepared, and we'll give it our best shot.
Luke, you achieved an art degree at Northwestern, and you've been a painter, and I wonder if you're continuing to still paint. But also, I wondered what you learned from that discipline and the way that art is taught, perhaps, in terms of how you've applied it to, you know, your own views of golf, both in the way you've learned yourself and maybe how you would talk about it to your team.
Well, it's been a long time since I've picked up paintbrushes. Unfortunately, when I started having children, that kind of took a lot of my free time up. But, you know, I always said it did help me. It helped me to be kind of use that artistic side of my brain in terms of visualization, visualizing golf shots, how things were turning out. I was always a little bit more of a feel player, going on instincts, going on not just pure technique, but, you know, feel. You know, I think my game was always based on great wedge play and going towards the hole with putting, and I think that's some artistry about that, you know, and certainly I don't know if I can relate that to my captaincy and helping these 12 guys, because everyone plays a different style of game, but certainly it's helped me in my individual career.
Luke, speaking of your game inside the ropes, I know the last few years have not been what you have wanted, the results maybe that you wanted to turn in. How much has this captaincy kind of given you new life and perhaps a reason to fall in love with the game again?
I don't think I've ever fallen out of love with the game, Damon, but yeah, it's been disappointing, no doubt. You know, when you go from a level that's on top of the world to, you know, struggling to make some cuts, it's disappointing, but the fire is still there. The ambition is still there. I'm still working on my game. I'm still searching. And, you know, I saw some positive signs, actually, in the Italian Open. I finished fourth in driving accuracy, which I haven't done in a long time. And I'm excited to, you know, gain some of this motivation and inspiration from the players and being a captain. And hopefully that inspire me to some better golf individually on the golf course, too.
Luke, we hear a lot about the depth on the American team, whereas on the other side, there's this perception that Europe just has a small core group of superstars and then the bench gets thin. But when you look at these first few weeks of qualification, you had winners in Bob McIntyre and Guido Migliozzi and Shane Lowry, and then runners-up in various tours like Danny Willett and Alex Noren and Sepp Straka. Do you think there's a lot more depth on the European team than it's perhaps given credit for right now?
Yeah, I do, Eamon, and I couldn't have been happier with the start of the qualification. As you said, Bob McIntyre stepping up, Guido again stepping up, hitting one of the best shots, probably going to maybe be the best shot of the year into that 18th hole at Paris National. We all know who've played that hole how difficult that shot is, and to do it under pressure. You know, those are the kind of things that I'm looking at, you know, when it will come to picks. You know, guys that can really step up when the pressure's on and step up and hit great shots. So, you know, I'm excited about how qualification has started. I've seen a lot of, you know, some of these players that, you know, might have been fringe players really stepping up and showing me what they have, and that's very encouraging.
Well, Luke, it's fun to spend a few minutes with you 1 year out from the Ryder Cup in Rome. Grazie. We'll speak to you soon.
Grazie mille, guys. Thank you.
Luke Donald, composed as ever. Let's take a look at the European Ryder Cup list today. Three players from the European points list, three from the world points list will automatically qualify. That means six captain's picks for Luke Donald as well. Rory, Rahm, Lowry, new leaders of this team. Bob McIntyre, a winner at Marco Simone a couple of weeks ago. As Golf Today rolls on, we'll continue our reaction to our interviews with the captains today. What does Team Europe need to do to win back the Cup? More on Team Europe next. Welcome back to Golf Today. The Ryder Cup heads to Rome in 2023. Biennial event will take place at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club in Italy. Now, the European team will try to continue their win streak on home soil. Captains Luke Donald and Zach Johnson in Rome this week, taking in the sights as we're less than a year out from the team competition. Some cool photos in front of the Coliseum. Neat seeing that. Will we see another European victory? Did Luke Donald give us any tells on how he might combat this American juggernaut?
I think he gave us a signal of where he's going to start looking for answers, and that's in this Hero Cup that the European Tour announced would be played in Abu Dhabi in January, where he's going to pick two teams of 10 guys. They'll play four balls, foursomes and singles. And that's really where he's going to have to start to figure out where he can test partnerships, because he doesn't have any right now. The last successful European partnership last time around, the only bright spot at Whistling Straits was John Rahm, Sergio Garcia, which may be why Rahm has advocated the desire to see Sergio there again. There's a better chance I'm playing that Ryder Cup than Sergio Garcia is playing that Ryder Cup. So what are they going to do? Going to reunite Molinari and Fleetwood from Paris in 2018. He's got to figure out who can play with who. And one good way to do that is to use this Hero Cup, because that was one of Paul McGinley's great strategies in 2014, when he figured out who would marry well with who by taking control of tee times on the DP World Tour earlier in the year so that these guys were familiar with each other long before they ever got to Glen Eagles that
year. That's a great point. And Paul McGinley also played the underdog role so beautifully. The rock in the storm. Be the rock in the storm. Is Luke Donald already kind of setting the table, Jaime, for this team to be an underdog that goes on and wins for a seventh straight time in Europe?
I do feel like he's really playing very safe. And he's very self-contained, very controlled guy. He speaks cautiously. He's very smart. But it's what he doesn't say that's probably what he's really thinking. And he's just trying to keep, you know, the pressure on the Americans. You know, right now the Americans are the favorites, even though they've lost on foreign soil so often. In my opinion, they're just so good in terms of the world ranking that it's just hard to pick against them. And especially since they're coming off of what they did at Whistling Straits. And by the same token, Luke knows the history of the Ryder Cup, and he pulled off a lot of upsets himself on the teams that he won on. And he was a great partner of Sergio as well. So Luke is, I think, somebody who's going to rest, much like Zach, on his aura, which even though they're sort of introverted and not necessarily high-profile guys, among the players they have an aura. They're really highly respected, especially Luke. To get to number one and stay there for 56 weeks at a time when golf was transitioning to a power game and he was a short hitter who wasn't particularly straight, that was artistry, as he talked about. You know, he does have an artistic sensibility about his golf game, and it's a beautiful game. And it's not there like it used to be, obviously, but just the, you know, legacy of that is something the players will respect, just as they respect Zach. And I just feel like, you know, he's going to be a good leader who's probably going to model himself more after Jose Maria Lothabel, Bernard Langer, that type of captaincy, you know, stay in the background with kind of silent authority. And I think, you know, although he doesn't have the fame that those two guys have, he does have silent authority with his reputation. And I think that's all he can do is just set it out there. As Eamon said, who knows who the pairings will be. But it's really about a team that goes there confidently and doesn't feel it's under pressure and that the pressure's on the other team. I think that's the art right now of what the captains are trying to do to each other.
Damon, didn't you think it was interesting to pick up on Jaime's point of Luke Donald, what he doesn't say, is how he skated around the issue of whether the team might be divided over LIV Golf, where you have John Rahm saying, I'd like to see Sergio there. You've got Rory saying, no mass. It's kind of interesting that this dynamic, it's beyond his remit right now, so you can understand why he doesn't get into it. But that's going to be a struggle for him to kind of tune out the LIV noise much more so than his counterpart.
I agree. There's so much institutional knowledge potentially lost with these LIV defections. You're talking about Poulter inside the ropes, outside the ropes, Sergio, G-Mac, Westwood, Stenson, Keimer. I mean, these are Ryder Cup legends. And so maybe they were at the end of their playing, you know, strength. I think that's fair to say. But my goodness, so much about Europe has been about inspiration and knowledge and cohesion. And now you got to call up, you know, it's next man up in the NFL. It's going to be next man up for Luke Donald as well.
Or perhaps there will be a division about, hey, these guys could still get in. Come on, you know, like Rahm is saying.
He better stamp that out.
I think so.
You can't wait till 6 months from now or there, 3 months from now.
There can't be any resentment about that.
They've got to get that out of the way, I think, early. And Rory has tried to say, let's turn the page to these new players, the Hogarth twins and Bobby McIntyre. It's time for a new era. How important is it that they kind of get that settled now?
You don't want that distraction coming up constantly in press conferences or news articles from now until next year. You got to end it. Now, legally, they're probably not in a position to say these guys aren't going to be able to play. Clearly, there's a desire among some leaders in the team not to see the LIV guys there. There's certainly a desire among the DP World Tour not to see them there. Luke Donald's going to have to navigate that as it goes along, because he also doesn't want to alienate John Rahm right off the bat and say, you know what, you can stop that talk right now because Sergio ain't joining you.
And the irony is John Rahm was one of the first to stand up and go, I'm not interested in LIV and I don't believe in LIV. You know, I think he's being loyal to a countryman. But I think Sergio's done so many things that are alienating to the DP World Tour and to the Ryder Cup tradition.
He also kept John Rahm's buddy out of the tournament in Wentworth a couple of weeks ago by taking a space and then quitting after 18 holes.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going to have legs.
Well, John Rahm got closer to Sergio Garcia because of their success together in the Ryder Cup. Even behind the scenes, they weren't necessarily as close as they are now post Whistling Straits. Well, Tiger Woods, of course, played in his first Ryder Cup back in 1997, but took to social media today, not about the Ryder Cup, but announcing the field for this year's Hero World Challenge. Woods has yet to hint at whether he will compete. He played in three majors this year after his car accident in February
2021. He last played in the Hero in 2019 when he finished fourth. The event takes place December 1 through the 4th at Albany in the Bahamas. Take a look at this current field, strength to strength. You've got young players at the beginning. You've got veterans. You've got major champs. Will Zalatoris hoping to be healthy. And you see there are three additional players to be announced, which makes you wonder, you know, Tiger, height of his power, wouldn't always let us know until that Friday before we would see him at the next week or a couple weeks down the road. Is this a situation, you've covered him for such a long time, where he's going to wait and see?
I think that's his best move, because I think he's probably, if not day-to-day, certainly month-to-month in terms of his health. Mm. And I don't think he wants to commit to something that perhaps will put him in an awkward situation of not having enough to be proud of his game. Mm. I think he wants to be proud of his game when he puts it on display from here on in as much as possible, even though there are going to be some limitations. He wants to feel, you know, ready and competent. And the last thing he wants to do is go out there, especially at his own tournament,
yes,
sort of create something that people feel bad about, mm, you know, because he just doesn't have the physical capability. And he's I think, really cognizant of let's put my best foot forward. No pun intended, sorry, in terms of, you know, this is my tournament, this is a great stage. No negativity here. Mm. If I'm good, I'm good. If I'm not good, I'm not going to play. Mm.
Zach Johnson has six captain's picks a year from now. Why wouldn't Tiger Woods be one of them if he's capable of playing? You send him out there once a day. You send him out in the alternate shot. Mm. The absolute weight of his reputation alone could be worth half a point before you even get to the tee with your opponents.
Fascinating question. Mm. You know how he has become this avuncular figure in the game? You know that if it was even a possibility that the players, Justin Thomas in particular, and down the line, you would have to think, would say, let's make room for the big cat if he was healthy enough. Because he wants to do it. I was there at the Open where Henny asked him, are you going to retire this week? He was like, me? No. I think he said like eight no's. So the guy's the ultimate competitor. Any possibility that he would be added to the team?
If the ball is going where he's looking, yeah. But if it's not going there, he shouldn't be out there.
Can you imagine the team is that good that they can put Tiger in with a question mark perhaps out? Well, Marco Simone?
We just saw the list of guys who are playing at the Hero. You could draw a pretty good Ryder Cup team just from the entry field right there as well. We know Tiger's going to be involved to one degree or another. I don't think we should assume that's going to be outside the ropes. Well, it's favorites and underdogs in Rome. Not much different in Las Vegas. That's where the PGA Tour is headed this week. So our favorite odds maker, Paige McKenzie, joins the show to place some bets, both safe and risky. Golf Today continues after this.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Exciting start to the new PGA Tour season. Don't you agree? Started last month, the Fortinet Championship in Napa, where Max Homa won his fifth PGA Tour title, highlighted by that crazy two-shot swing on the 72nd hole. Chip in for Homa, three-putt for Danny Willett. Then you got the Sanderson Farms last week. Mackenzie Hughes ended a six-year winless drought, getting that victory, beat out Sepp Straka on the second playoff hole by draining that eight-foot birdie putt, walking it in, did Mackenzie Hughes. And now this week, the PGA Tour will make its annual stop in Vegas, baby, Vegas, for the Shriners Children's Open. Some of the game's biggest names return to TPC Summerlin, including Patrick Cantlay, the UCLA Bruin, and defending champion Sung J.M. Now, one of the first things that comes to mind when you think about Vegas, got to be the Strip and all the gambling Sin City attracts year-round, pumping oxygen into the casino, no clocks, friendly wait staff, got to have a rock at third base, the blackjack table, or you move to a different table. Maybe that's just me. Brings us to our next segment. Let's place your bets. Welcome in Paige McKenzie. Paige, who are your best bets this week in Vegas, baby? Vegas.
I know it makes sense that we do this week in particular, but I have to take a look at Sung J.M., who's the defending champion here. Also, individually going into the President's Cup, he had finished runner-up 3 out of 5 events, so he has good form as well as the fact that he has played well here. And for Sungjae, you're looking at -115 at DraftKings, and that, if you're new to gambling, if you were at -115, that would mean your payout for a $100 bet would be 186. Now, if you like him at -115, I will say, Damon, I did the work with DraftKings odds that came out yesterday. PointsBet has since put their odds out. So if you like Sungjae at minus 115, you might want to take a look at plus 155 at PointsBet. And what that means, again, if you're still new and trying to figure out what these numbers mean, $100 bet would pay out 255. That's a huge delta. So it certainly pays to shop the odds. But I like Sungjae either way. Good form and coming back to a golf course he's defending at.
Love that. 2-2-1 in the President's Cup. Beat Cam Young one up in the singles. Some other players who you see value in, Paige?
Well, I got to keep the President's Cup theme because I do think there's a potential for a bounce for players that maybe were in the cauldron of President's Cup and ease up a little bit. And I'm looking at Cam Davis, and Cam Davis at a top 20. For him, it's plus 170 at DraftKings. And I think he could get that President's Cup bounce. And when you also consider his recent form coming into this week, he's top 20 five of his last seven events worldwide. So I have to believe that if he can carry that top 20 theme through at plus 170, I see pretty good value for Cam Davis.
Well, Paige, Vegas is always about taking on a little bit more risk, looking for that big thrill, the big kill. Who do you think's the biggest gamble this week at Shriners?
You know, I think a very popular name this fall has been Max Homa. Obviously, winning the first event out, playing great at President's Cup the week following. But coming into this week, I'm a little surprised that he's the book's third favorite. He sits outright at plus 1,400, and it's easy to believe that he might be able to continue to ride that momentum. I have a tendency to want to fade Max Homa this week, though. He's only 1-for-5 even making the cut in this event. So I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit. And this, to me, it would be a big gamble to play Max Homa outright this week. And if you want somebody maybe that's even a bigger gamble than Max Homa, a name that's popped up a lot in fantasy as well as betting this week would be Taylor Montgomery. This is a rookie on the PGA Tour. He's played really well in the first two events that he's teed up, and the only PGA Tour player to have top 10 his first two events. And this is a Las Vegas native. Not only is he born and raised, but also went to UNLV. And if you're wondering, well, maybe playing at home might be a little too much pressure, he's played well in Nevada. In fact, he won the 2020 Nevada Open as well as the 2021 Nevada Open. So carrying some good vibes at playing at home, or at least in his home state, coming into this week at plus 3,500 or 35 to 1, that's pretty long odds, but maybe if you want him for another top 10, maybe he can go three in a row. He's at plus 330, so over 3-1 on a top 10. So somebody to keep your eye on that maybe is a little bigger gamble.
Love that. Maybe a first-time winner at TPC Summerlin. Taylor Montgomery.
Maybe you'll have something else to bet on instead of Tom Kim for a change.
Yeah, or myself. Keep coming in tied for second. Great stuff. Paige, we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, guys.